Welcome to Seniority Authority, the podcast where I track down experts to answer your questions on aging. I'm your host, Kathleen Toomey. Let's get smarter about growing older. Most of us are aware of the high cost of care for those with dementia, whether it be the need to hire paid caregivers, change your living situation, or consider a move to a dedicated residential community. And if you're an unpaid family caregiver, in addition to the cost, there's also the stress of balancing your own job, family, and home, along with helping your loved one. Today, we're going to dive into a new dementia caregiver support program from the Penn Memory Center in Philadelphia that uses experienced family caregivers to mentor those who are starting the journey that has yielded some great results. Welcome to Seniority Authority. I'm your host, Kathleen Toomey. My guest today is Felicia Greenfield, former executive director of the Penn Memory Center, where she ran the Caring Collective program. Felicia is a licensed clinical social worker with nearly two decades' experience in caring for older adults living with dementia, as well as their families. Today, she's a psychotherapist and consultant in private practice counseling individuals and families living with a dementia diagnosis, caregivers, and grieving individuals. She teaches advanced clinical practice at the University of Pennsylvania's School of Social Policy and Practice. Thanks to our show sponsor, the Riverwoods Group, Northern New England's largest family of not-for-profit continuing care retirement communities, where independent, active adults find purpose, community, and peace of mind. Visit us at riverwoodsgroup.org. Now, let's hear from today's guest. Thank you for joining the podcast, Felicia.
Thank you for having me today, Kathleen.
I was so excited to learn about this program when I read about it in the New York Times. And doing some further research, I understand that the idea for this program came from a spouse who wanted to give back after her husband died from dementia. How long did this idea take to evolve?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So Susan Jewett is the name of the person who came to me and presented this idea. I've known Susan for about 10 years. Her husband, Carl, was our patient, and I worked as a support person for Susan through her husband's illness. He unfortunately died from COVID early in those days, back in January, I guess it was 2020. She went through a grieving process for about a year, and then she started to come out of it a little bit, the fog, and she called me up on the phone one day, and she said, I have an idea, something that I wish I had back when Carl was first diagnosed with Alzheimer's is somebody who had walked in my shoes before. Susan was a part of our caregiver community and a part of our support group, which is a tight-knit group. But she said, you know, it would have been nice to have somebody who had my lived experience, who could have taught me things about this illness that only somebody who's walked in these shoes could have. And so I've been thinking, she said to me, and I've been thinking that maybe I'd like to be that person for someone else on the other side of this, right? So she said, do you think the Penn Memory Center would be open to developing a program where people like me who are on the other side of caregiving and feel ready to give back could mentor caregivers newer on this journey? And I was like, that sounds amazing. So we started talking and brainstorming, and I went back to my team of social workers and we chatted about how to make it work. And to answer your question, it took about a year for us to get our ducks in a row to eventually be able to launch and offer the program.
I think this sounds like such a fantastic program. And I love that it was inspired by somebody who had been a caregiver. And for those who care for someone living with dementia, this can be a way to kind of make meaning out of what they went through and share their knowledge and empathy. Is that kind of the inspiration here?
I think so. I think that's where Susan was coming from. Basically, she went through hell and learned a lot in the process and very much felt compelled to give back in some way. Her initial vision for this program was for people who are no longer caregivers and who are maybe a year out of that experience so that mm-hmm. they feel emotionally prepared to be mentors. It's evolved since her initial vision, and we do accept mentors who are farther along in their caregiving experience, but who also feel like they have something to offer. And also they feel sturdy enough to do the work, because it was a big concern of ours to not overburden people right. who are still in a caregiving role.
I like the fact that in this program, you intentionally pair people who have gone through the journey with people who are at a different point. Because as we all know, the dementia journey is as different as every individual going through it. There's not a lot of clarity or repetitiveness about, well, if you do this now, you're going to be here in 3 months. It's so different. And the fact that you take someone who's had some experience to be a guide, I think is really powerful. In your experience, what's been the benefits of that program to the mentee? What do they learn from this connection?
So first of all, I think they feel understood. Even family and friends don't always understand what they're living day to day. But it feels really refreshing to have somebody who actually does get exactly what they're going through. The mentors have learned the things to say and not to say to caregivers. And so there's a common language that they speak. And I think another benefit that mentees have expressed is just, you've gotten through this and you're okay and you're still here and strong. And so it's kind of a message of hope and inspiration that they too will be able to get through this whole.
That sounds fantastic. How do you train mentors? So you had someone come up with this idea and then you took a year to put it together and execute it. What do you look for in a mentor who's obviously gone through this journey? And what kind of training do you give them to qualify them?
Yeah. First of all, we piloted this program. We piloted it with a couple of different dyads and kind of a focus group. And we learned through the process what was important in the training. And so some of the key aspects of the training include teaching somebody how to be an empathetic listener rather than somebody who passes judgment, right? So we spend a lot of time on empathy versus judgment. We also want mentors to be able to offer referrals and suggestions, but not provide direct care, not pick up the phone and do the work for the caregiver. So there's a balance. We want them to kind of help caregivers brainstorm to find their own solutions that will work for them without advocating their own agenda, right? So as you said, it's all very different and we might be very similar in our caregiving experience. These are some things that work for me. They may not work for you, but what will work for you? So let me help you brainstorm some kind of problem solving solutions. The other pieces of the training that I think are really important, we spend a lot of time on boundary setting. We don't want mentors being woken up in the middle of the night if there's a crisis. So the calls are very scheduled and structured and just really working on advocacy, self-care, and listening. I think that's kind of our kind of training agenda.
Those sound like great life skills, first of all.
Right? Yeah.
But also I think important because as we said, the beginning, everyone's journey is different. Everyone, what's acceptable to people are different. So you can't say, I did this, so you must do that. It's not a directive, but a partnership. How long does it take for a mentor to go through this kind of training that you've set up?
I don't It's a day. Like, I have okay. like a couple hours, you know, we have some modules and yeah, we created a training module video. Yeah. Interactive. We do some interactive and some video, but it can all be done in a few hours.
Right. And can be done online, I assume?
Yes, on Zoom.
Okay. That's really important. And one thing that I really love and what I think is one of the keys to making this a successful and unusual program is that it is time bound. It's not like you are mentoring for life or for the entire journey. It's a certain amount of time. And personally, I think it's a nice opportunity for someone to volunteer at a time structured where, you know, there's a beginning and an end. How did you come up with that structure?
Part of it came out of our focus group, our pilot training. That was a suggestion from one of the mentors. And then part of it was really practical. We have a limited number of mentors and far more mentees.
Yeah, so I can imagine.
If we matched one-to-one and it was a long-term relationship, there we would have a long wait list for the mentees. So we structured it so that people get up to 8 mentor sessions. And then at the end of the 8 sessions, the mentor has the opportunity to take a break if they need a break, stop altogether mm-hmm. if they want to stop, or sign up for another mentor.
And the 8 sessions, is that like once a week generally, or do you let people decide?
Yeah, it's generally once a week, but we do give the mentor and mentee the flexibility to decide their schedules.
Okay. I would think that this is a hugely desired program on the part of the mentees. How do you find and motivate the mentors?
So that's a good question. So as you know, Alzheimer's disease is a long protracted illness. And at the Memory Center, we're an outpatient clinical practice. We follow patients over the trajectory of their disease. So what that affords us is the opportunity to form really good relationships with families. And we also have a robust kind of communications department that puts out a lot of helpful information. Our social work team, in addition to Caring Collective, has many, many, many other programs that are available to caregivers. So the point I'm making is we have an engaged audience, mm-hmm. An engaged group of people. So there's trust established, there's a relationship established. And typically when we put something out as an opportunity to get involved in, we have a high turnout. And so when we promoted the Caring Collective program, we offered a Zoom session with any mentors. We opened it up to only mentors first to have a panel discussion with the people who were in our pilot program, and then myself and some other social workers on our team. So we kind of presented the program, let the panelists speak to their experience, and did a Q&A. And then right after that, they had an opportunity to complete an online application if they were interested. And we just had an overwhelming response of people who were interested in being mentors as a way to give back.
That is phenomenal. And I think that it's a real gift for a mentor to say, okay, I want to directly help someone. And I could see where that would be a motivator. I think the other wonderful thing about this program is it's free. There's no cost. So in the escalating huge cost of caregiving for people with dementia, this is one option where they're given some experienced advice and counsel for no fee. So I can imagine this is probably going to just be an incredibly successful program. Now it's in its second year, first year?
It's in its first year.
Okay. And you've served 40 people?
As of a couple months ago, we had served 40 mentees. The number has probably increased since then.
Okay. Now, tell me a little bit about the work of the Penn Memory Center, and are there similar institutions in other places within the country, because you obviously have a ton of research and resources. Why do people originally come to the Penn Memory Center, and what is it that you do there?
Yes. So the Penn Memory Center is a clinical arm. It's the overarching infrastructure is the Penn Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, or ADRC. There are about 30 ADRCs at academic institutions across the U.S. The mission of the ADRCs is to conduct research. So that, I would say, is a primary mission of the Penn Memory Center. We also have a mission to educate and train. And then we also have a clinical care mission. So the Penn Memory Center kind of is embedded in the clinical care mission. And so we are an outpatient clinical practice at the University of Pennsylvania. People come to us because they're concerned about memory loss. And when they come, we conduct an evaluation, and it's a two kind of step process. So they come in for their initial visit, we gather data, they have an MRI of the brain, then they come back to hear the diagnosis. And at the time of diagnosis, they have the opportunity to sit down with somebody on the social work team who offers education and support, kind of meets families where they are. Everybody's a little bit different when they come in. Some people come in kind of thinking that this might be an issue. Some people are really caught off guard and taken by surprise with the diagnosis. So we assess where they are. Back in 2015, 2016, we were a recipient of a philanthropic gift, a large gift, with the intention of developing caregiver support programs. This was from a person whose wife had Alzheimer's. They were our patients, and he was impressed with the help that we were able to offer, and he wanted us to be able to expand it and give services away for free to people who needed them. So that was established in 2016, and it continues. And it is what it has allowed us to hire a team of social workers to offer a wide range of support services, including the Caring Collective.
Fantastic. If one of our listeners wanted to find an ADRC in their area, how would they go about finding other ADRCs? Is there a unified website?
There is. Yep. You could just Google Alzheimer's Disease Research Centers, and a website will pop up, and there's actually a physical map with blue dots as to where all of the centers are located.
Fantastic. And that will be in our show notes. So we will include a link to that for folks that are interested in doing this. If you're getting smarter, let us know. Leave us a review or rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Tell your friends and follow us on social. We're at Seniority Authority on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. And don't forget, if you're listening to YouTube, hit the notification bell so you can subscribe. Or subscribe to our newsletter at senioritythority.org so you don't miss a thing. In this process of creating the program in the first very successful year, were there any unanticipated hurdles that you had to overcome? And if so, how did you overcome them?
Honestly, there have not been any hurdles so far.
Wow, that's awesome.
I know. We have Meg Kalafsky. I want to shout out to Meg. She is our associate director for social programs, and she's really an organized, kind of talented person who is running the program, and she just is able to do it. And we haven't had any issues so far, knock on wood.
That's terrific. How do you match the mentors and the mentees? You have many more mentees than mentors. So what's that process like?
Yeah, another great question. So this is another skill of Meg's. She puts together interview questions and then makes matches based on commonalities. So the mentees are asked what they're looking for in a mentor. And sometimes it's important for mentees to be matched with, like, for example, well, I'm taking care of my mom, so I want another caregiver who took care of a parent as opposed to a spousal match. Or, you know, my husband has Lewy body dementia, not Alzheimer's. So I really want a mentor who has had experience caregiving for somebody with Lewy body dementia. Sometimes people want someone with a similar background in terms of gender or race or sexuality. So we kind of query the mentees, and then we already have the data on the mentors, and then we make a match and we ask them to meet. And if the match doesn't feel like a good fit, they can speak up and we can look to change it, but we haven't had that. So Meg's just been really good at making good matches.
And I love the fact that this is an online program. So they meet by Zoom. So I think that really helps from a caregiver standpoint, because I think one of the challenges for caregivers is getting out of the house to physically go somewhere that's a caregiving support group while they're still trying to take care of the person that has dementia.
Yes, that is true. But folks have the opportunity to meet outside of Zoom if they want. I was talking to another mentor. She and her mentee happen to live in the same neighborhood, so they go for walks. And
oh, that's great.
Hour. Yeah. So there's definitely flexibility built into the structure.
How do you measure the success of the program?
Right now, we're measuring it qualitatively. So we're asking open-ended questions and hearing what people's experiences were, asking if there's anything that they would change, anything that they would absolutely not change. And that's been our method so far. We haven't developed quantitative tools to measure it in that regard, but I think the program lends itself nicely to qualitative evaluation.
And what do mentees say is the benefit of the program?
Somebody who understands me, somebody who can remind me that there is life after caregiving,
right.
Somebody who has modeled that they've been able to create an identity for themselves. I think one person has said that she knows how this is going to end, and she hopes to someday be a mentor herself. You know, I think it's this bonding of a shared experience.
Yeah. And I think you had mentioned earlier that there are certain things that you suggest people say and not say when they are mentors, and that they understand how to frame things. Can you share a couple of examples with our audience as to what you encourage people to say to someone caring for someone with dementia? What are the kind of like, don't ever say that, or reframe it this way?
Yeah. So, and caregivers know this intuitively, because people are always, this is a common theme in support groups, what friends and family say that they wish they wouldn't say.
This is for our listeners. So anyone listening there, here's some tips for you.
So there was actually an interesting This American Life podcast last week, and there was a segment about that a woman wrote about how annoyed she is every time somebody, she says, oh, I'm caring for my mom. My mom has Alzheimer's. And people's immediate kind of knee-jerk reaction is to say, oh, that's so sad. Does she know who you are? Does she still know who you are? And this woman's whole point was, it doesn't matter if she knows who I am. She knows that I'm there for her. She knows that she can trust me. And so, like, that's a question maybe you don't need to ask. Right?
Right. Because is it really any of your business?
Right. Too? And does it really matter? Like,
yeah.
Right. Exactly. Who knows? Maybe she knows me. Maybe she doesn't. But mm-hmm. Right. So it's not helpful. Something that would be more helpful is, how can I help you? Is there anything I can do to help you with your mom?
Mm-hmm.
Can I take your husband out to lunch today?
Mm-hmm. And I think I've heard that too. One of the challenges, people really do want to help, but they don't know how to help. And so it can be good to say, here are five things that I would like help with. I tell caregivers, or my recommendation to caregivers is that if someone says, how can I help? Say, can you pick up groceries for me this week? Or can you do this one thing? Or what would you like to help with? Because I think people, if you don't offer a way for people to help, then the people that really want to help are don't know what to do. Do you recommend that?
I do. But sometimes I get pushback from caregivers who don't necessarily want to have to coach people to do that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So yes,
okay.
I agree with that strategy. I coach caregivers to have specific asks in mind, and many of them will, but sometimes they don't want to. Sometimes they want the person offering help to offer something concrete as well.
Okay.
So I think it goes both ways. So if you're going to offer help, be prepared with something that you can actually do to offer and not necessarily put the burden on the caregiver who's already experiencing some overwhelm.
And I think that is great advice for our listeners. And this also pairs with people who are grieving, that sometimes it's just more helpful to say, I would like to take a walk with you for 20 minutes, or I'm going to bring you a dinner. Is there anything you don't like? Or just to say, this is what I am specifically going to do. And then say, can you give me another task to get off your plate? I recently had someone say to me, as I was going through a very difficult time, a friend of mine said, I'm going to do your window boxes this winter, because I know you don't have time. And that was such a gift to say, oh, thank you. Thank you for, because I don't have time to worry about what my window boxes look like, but you're really good at that. So for our listeners, really think about specific, you're not committing to a lifetime of window boxes or a lifetime of meals, but think about something specific you think would be helpful that someone does not have to do.
Totally. And I also think that one of the most important things caregivers want that they don't necessarily ask for is just spend time with their person. Simply spending time, not even an outing, just
right.
Talk to them and engage with them because they're still here.
Yes. Yes. And I think a lot of people are afraid, or they're like, well, I don't know what to say, but just having another presence is so important. So this sounds like such a great program. If we had people listening who would like to start a program like this in their area, what would you suggest they do?
So it's a low-cost program. It really requires one, not even full-time staff person, I would say, to run it, to organize it. I think that people who will be successful in launching a program like this are people who are already serving this community, people living with dementia and caregivers. I think people who have relationships already established and have had a long-term kind of relationship with many of them, because those are going to be your mentors. Having that kind of base will help people be successful. And then it's about recruiting mentors, explaining what the program is. I think actually I want to take a step back and say, whatever your community is, involve your stakeholders. So involve the people in the caregiving community that you're supporting and have a focus group and talk about what folks need, what folks think is a gap in services with your organization. Pitch this idea, see if it flies with your stakeholders. And if it does, then engage them in kind of piloting the program and ask them to be part of the training. So from there, you know, you have this involvement, you've identified it as a need that people think is important and necessary in your community. And then What we did was we piloted it with a couple dyads. So two caregivers and two mentors and two mentees. And we told them to see what it was like for like 4 to 6 sessions and then come back to us and give us feedback. And how right. can we, you know, how, what worked, what didn't work, what could we right. do differently?
Right.
So before we rolled it out to the larger population, we did a small pilot.
Really, really important. And in your new role as an independent consultant, is this something that you could help other organizations kick off?
I would love to do that. I mean, this program in particular, but all of our programs at the Memory Center, you know, it took time to build. And so it would be a dream of mine if other organizations wanted to adopt these models, and I would be more than happy to help folks figure it out.
Yeah, because what I think is wonderful about this is, as opposed to the caregiving support groups, which are great and have a place and are important, this is a one-to-one individual, meet you where you are, matching a lived experience with another lived experience. It's really unique there, is that I'm going to follow you and be with you for 8 sessions. So kind of I'm your person that has gone through this. And I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, there's a lot of creativity and flexibility within the protocol. So even though the mentor-mentee relationship ends after 8 sessions, if both parties want to stay connected informally outside the program, they have a new friend.
Awesome. Where do you see this program in 10 years? Do you see it staying at Penn Memory? Do you see it growing to other places? What's your grand vision?
I mean, I would love for it to grow to other places. The Penn Memory Center is confined to programming at the Penn Memory
yeah.
Center, right?
Yeah.
So we will continue running this program and growing this program. And hopefully, you know, it will be around in 10 years and helping many, many people. But the Penn Memory Center isn't, at this point, is not in a position to then branch out into other.
Yeah, that's not your mission.
Yeah,
but
right.
For all those people listening, I love this idea. I think this is great. And it's not a high cost. And it provides a way for people to make meaning out of their pain and experience and moments of joy. And it's a way to really practically help someone who's in that moment right now, because there's the empathy, there's the connection. So I really would love to see this grow and to see people call you and try to recreate this in other parts of the country.
I would love that too, Kathleen.
Yeah. You have been such a great guest, and I love just expanding the awareness of what you're doing. But now we have our Fast 5 lightning round, where we're going to get to know you a little bit more as a person.
Oh, boy.
So this is the fun part. So tell me, what is your favorite guilty pleasure?
Well, I can't get enough watching cat videos on Instagram.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Cat videos. I love it. I love it. What's your favorite healthy practice?
I live in Center City, Philadelphia, so I walk and bike everywhere. I also have a Peloton in my basement, and I try to use it every day.
Wow, that's wonderful. Oh my gosh. And being in a walking environment is such a gift.
Mm-hmm.
What is guaranteed to make you laugh, Felicia?
I would say watching my husband watch cat videos on Instagram.
Okay. Do you have cats?
We have 2 cats, no kids. Our cats are our kids.
Okay.
I have Instagram. I show him mine, and then he gets all into it. He criticizes me, makes fun of me, but then he gets into it. And that's
then he
fun.
Gets into it. Do your cats have an Instagram account?
We have these dud cats. They're kind of boring. We can't get them to do anything Instagram worthy, unfortunately.
Okay. Tell us the last book that you loved.
So I recently went through a phase of reading all of Jennifer Egan's books all consecutively. And I think A Visit from the Goon Squad is one of my favorite of her books.
She's a great writer. Oh my gosh. And she writes in such different genres. You can read all of her books and they're all completely different environment. I'm a fan of hers. And a favorite escape.
I think that's a toss-up between a hike in the woods or a swim in the ocean.
Both wonderful. Both. Thank you so much. This has been a wonderful experience. I really appreciate you sharing this information with our audience. And we are going to have links to Felicia's website, to the ADRC website. And please think about how this could happen wherever you are, because I think we can all help each other on this very challenging journey of dementia and caregiving. That's our show for today. If it helped you think differently, would you help me? Go to Seniority Authority page on your podcasting app and hit the plus, the heart, the favorite, or the subscribe button so you don't miss out. And tell your friends so we can spread the word. Until then, enjoy the chance to get smarter about growing older. That's our show for today. If you liked it, please tell your friends so we can reach more minds and keep the conversation going. Or follow us on social at Seniority Authority. I'm Kathleen Toomey. Until next time, enjoy your chance to get smarter about growing older.